Hello and welcome to the Journey to a Dream podcast, which is all about talking to people who have quite literally lived their dream. And today we meet somebody who's not only lived his dream, he's raced the Manx Grand Prix, but he's also now instrumental in helping others to do the same. Let's meet Dave Bösendorfer.
Hi, I'm currently a rider coach up at Jerby, previously raced, then went into scrutineering, gone on to put something back into the sport, rider coach-wise. Born in the Isle of Man, near the TT Grandstand, on the Douglas side.
I'm just going to say, first of all, though, you haven't got a very Manx surname, have you, Dave?
I haven't. That's my dad's fault. No, my dad came over from Germany. He was a car mechanic, also a bike mechanic, so obviously fits in with the Isle of Man. So he came over to the Isle of Man probably around about the 50s, decided to settle over here. Then he started his own garage business. I've been around motorsport from a very early age, born in the Isle of Man, as I say. People often think, you know, I'm from Germany, but no, my dad was.
I just wonder how many times you have to spell your name over the phone.
Quite a lot. But most people get used to it.
And, you know, it's a lovely thing, isn't it, when there is clearly a passion that is passed down through the family. Obviously, your dad interested in anything with a motor. And I'm guessing, as with so many people that we speak to on this podcast, you don't really remember a time when that wasn't a part of your life.
I don't. I mean, as I say, you know, from a young child, watching the bikes, like every kid, you know, really enjoyed it. And as I say, my dad, actually, apart from owning a garage as well, he was actually the advertising contractor for the TT and the Manx. So he was responsible for all the signage, the banners, even the old Dunlop clock, which is quite famous, if anyone remembers that, and the Dunlop bridges and things like that. So when I was old enough, I used to help him on that. So that was the corporate side of things. So I was introduced to that at a very early age. So I remember attending many corporate events with him and going around actually helping him on the course. So, you know, experienced it from quite an early age, really.
And so did little Dave get to meet any of the TT greats that he looked up to?
One or two. I do remember, you know, being in the company of certain riders. Obviously, at that age, I was young. But I do remember Hailwood, Agostini, people like that.
Just throwing those out there.
Yeah, from a very early age. So, yeah, I remember the Hailwood comeback in 78. That was just awesome. You know, I was only a teenager then. But the atmosphere at the back of the grandstand for that was unreal. And as I say, with my dad's connections and the advertising there, we were invited to a few functions, so that was pretty good.
At what point do you think then the first idea was planted in your head about the fact that actually, not only do I love being part of this world, but one day I want to race that course?
Yeah, I think early on, like every young kid, I think, you know, they look at the bikes and think, could I? What if? You know, I wonder what it's like. My first kind of experience with motorsport competing was on four wheels, really, rallying to start with. Then I did a bit of stock car racing, so Formula 2, which up at Onken in the 80s, which was quite big. So that was my first kind of foray into racing. So two wheels was kind of at the back of things, really. Always enjoyed it, always looked at the bikes and thought, maybe. I got back into bikes a little after the cars, really. I used to ride on the road a lot, started doing track days, thought, I'm all right at this. And with a bit of a push from family and friends, went into racing.
And what did your dad make of that?
Unfortunately, my dad had passed away before I actually competed. But yeah, he was quite supportive initially, certainly with the cars. But as I say, growing up, you know, my dad had cars, bikes about in the garage. He also had a boat. He was a private pilot. So, you know, as a kid, I was like, you know, I had lots of stuff to play.
Wow, that's incredible. And what a playground it must have been for you. And I guess there was never going to be any chance of you not going down that road some way.
Oh, there was definitely something, yeah. As I say, got back into bikes and really enjoyed that. And I ended up getting quite successful quite quickly and ended up actually being more competitive on two wheels than I was on four.
And then when did the mountain course really sort of rear its head for you?
Well, obviously, as I say, growing up with it, watching it, I used to help out various riders. And then when I got into it myself, obviously competing at Jerby through the Andreas Racing, 2008 was the big year for me. I won the Isle of Man Championship in the class I was riding, competed in the UK, various circuits like Donington, Alton, and then got an entry into the Manx Grand Prix that year. I think I did 100 mile an hour lap pretty quickly, which that was an achievement for me, and finished all three races that I competed in. So that was the big year for me, really.
And once you'd done that, what happened next? Did you kind of have your eyes set on another goal?
It was a bit of a box tick, really, for me. We were looking to start a family around that time as well. So I kind of, as I say, ticked the box with the mountain course thing, but wanted to keep in with the sport. So initially I started training as a technical official, or scrutineers, as we're often known. So I did that for a couple of seasons.
That must be a really interesting insight, because you've been the racer, you've had to go through that. And I can imagine that wandering up to the scrutineering bay, there must be a little bit of apprehension. You're thinking, oh, flipping heck, is there going to be anything they find? Being on the other side of that, and sometimes, I suppose, having to say to a rider, it's not going to happen for you today, that must be really tough.
It can be, but I think the riders realise that, you know, we're not trying to stop them racing. It's a safety issue. So if we can find something that they might have missed, you know, then they're grateful generally. But yeah, it's how you approach it. You know, ex-riders, we know what they go through. So from that side of things, it was not a problem for me, really.
And in terms of training to become a scrutineer, what's involved?
Obviously, you take courses, seminars, and just doing it, really. You know, you pick up as you go along. We are trained. A lot of us have got mechanical backgrounds, which I did have, working in my dad's garage initially. Yeah, you know.
Can you ever walk past a bike without having a quick look at it and thinking, oh, that needs doing?
Yeah, I'm okay with that now. As I say, I went from a scrutineer. I was doing that for a couple of years, and the opportunity came on the race school at Jerby. So I thought, oh, that's something I can do. And fortunately, they took me on there as a rider coach. So I've been doing that now well over 10 years.
So tell us then how the race school works.
Well, the race school is an ACU-affiliated race school through Andreas Racing. And we bring on any newcomers, basically. So anyone who wants to start racing has to go through a course, a two-part stage with us. Up the grandstand, basically, we do a classroom course, is part one. And then the second part is on the track. So anyone now has to be licensed to race. So, but I enjoy it because, you know, you're putting something back and you're passing on the knowledge, really.
And how many coaches are there?
There are four at the moment. There's myself, Gary, Johnny and Carolyn Sells, who's just come on board last year. So,
and all with those racing backgrounds. And again, you know, as you're talking about with the scrutineering, you know exactly what it's like to be in that position, to be the newbie and sort of like having to figure out how it all works.
Yeah, as I say, not all of us have been scrutineers. Gary wasn't a scrutineer. He went from racing pretty much straight into the coaching side. Carolyn, again, you know, from racing straight in. Me and Johnny are both ex-scrutineers as well, so that helps. But essentially we're there, you know, to guide them. We've basically, most of the top guys on the island now, the local lads, they've all come through the race school. You know, some of the top names that have all come through our school, and it's good. It's great to see the progress of them, you know.
Yeah, there must be some immense pride, especially when you think about the recent success of locals over the past couple of years, of sitting there thinking, flippin' heck, I've been part of that journey.
Yeah, as I say, we've all done it, some more successful than others, but yeah, I enjoy it, as I say, and it is satisfying seeing the progress of some of these guys from rocking up to Jerby. You know, and now they're competing on the world stage. Some of them, you know, they're going abroad. Certainly on the road racing side, they're very successful. So, yeah, it is very satisfying.
So if somebody turns up, so you've done the course down at the grandstand, you've done the sort of the side of the more academic, I suppose you'd call it, side of it. Head up to Jerby. How long typically would it take for somebody to be able to progress and to be able to get their licence?
Well, we can sign them off pretty quickly. As I say, it's a mandatory course that they have to do. Classroom course, part one. Assessment on the track, part two. And if they pass all their sort of markers and we think they're up to speed, we can sign them off so they can actually get a licence quite quickly. What they need to go racing on the roads can take a couple of years, potentially, depending on how good they are.
And what does it mean, do you think, I suppose, to you as somebody who's been involved with the sport for so long, but also to the people rising up through the ranks, to have this sort of facility, this sort of ability to do that over here?
I think on the island, you know, we are exposed to bike racing more than most. And I think, you know, a lot of lads ride on the road and they get an ability. They think, yeah, maybe I can do that. And they come up to the school and give it a go. Not everyone wants to race the roads. Some of the lads that come up are quite happy to get a licence and just do track racing. We also get ordinary guys who ride the roads, local lads, ridden the roads for years. I'm talking about roads, open roads, you know, not racing, who may have been struggling with a part of their riding that they're not really comfortable with. And they come up to us and say, can we go on your school? I'm struggling with this part of my riding. And yeah, not a problem, you know, and we can help them, give them some techniques, some coaching. And at the end of the sessions, when they come up to you and say, oh yeah, I've really got it now, you know, and off they go and they enjoy their riding on the road. They've got no intention of racing, but we often do see some of them who really enjoy the track and go, oh, and we see them turn up and start racing, you know, so.
So how often typically do these sort of courses happen? How do people get involved with them?
Right, so if somebody wanted to start racing, approach the ACU, approach over here, it's Andreas Racing. Obviously, there's Andreas Racing. There's, I think, 7 or 8 events on the island on their calendar each year. So we run a race school on every test day prior to the race meeting. So there's not that many, to be fair. There's only, you know, 7 or 8. Yeah, so they just have to approach Andreas Racing, really, and check the website, look at the ACU, and join our courses, basically.
And this might be a stupid question, but, you know, no such thing as a stupid question, I'm going to guess, Dave. But in terms of people turning up, do they have to have their own bike? Is there any possibility of having a little bit of a tryout before you commit to such expenditure, I guess?
Yeah, they can do the race school with a road bike. Basically, we've had all sorts of bikes on the race school, from Groms to, you know, ZZRs to mopeds, you name it, we've had it. As long as they're safe, it's more to do with the technique and the behaviours rather than the actual outright speed. So you don't necessarily need a race bike to do the race school.
And over the past 10 years or so that you've been doing this, you mean you just mentioned technique there. Does that change very much? Do things like that adapt, or is it, you know, fairly settled?
Yeah, technique, it's like, you know, talent. You know, some people have more talent than others, more of an aptitude to it. We can certainly teach technique and how things affect them. It's like the difference between racing and coaching. Racing is mainly instinct, adrenaline. Coaching, you kind of slow it all down and you explain things, make them understand what they're doing. So, yeah, it has a big input. And you know, you can improve riders' technique quite considerably when they come on the school, certainly.
I'm just curious, and you mentioned adrenaline. Clearly, you had a bit of a taste for adrenaline and you did the MGP, as you say, sort of ticked that box. Have you lost that adrenaline urge now, or is it still there, sort of waiting?
Yeah, I mean, people say, you know, do you miss the danger of it and things like that? I don't think I miss the danger, but I certainly miss the adrenaline rush. But you get that on the track, really, you know. Obviously, we're not going at full racing speeds on the race school, but, you know, you're still out there. I mean, even the guys, when they go out on the road on a Sunday, you know, and I go out with some lads on a Sunday and, yeah, you get adrenaline rush riding a bike, not to the level that you would when you're racing. But, yeah, I still get it on the bike. It's there's nothing like it.
If I could wave a magic wand and say you can go racing again tomorrow, would you?
Probably yes. Once you've done it, there's nothing like it. Certainly, I know, you know, various riders have said it over the years about when you've done the mountain course, raced it on closed roads. There's nothing like it, you know. Everything else gives, it's a bit of an anticlimax, really. That's the problem.
I guess when you live over here as well, once you have raced the mountain course with the roads closed, pootling around it again must be, a little bit dull.
It can be, yeah. That's the problem. You get spoilt. I mean, I've had some, you know, some interesting moments when I was racing, you know, some amusing ones as well.
Would you like to share? Go on, share some amusing moments.
I can do. when I was racing, as I say, I was fortunate. I had some good sponsors, and one of my sponsors managed to get in my pit crew was two ex-professional riders, well-known. Andy McGladdery and Mick Jackson, known as Jacko. Very well-known guys, pair of characters. And I remember one instance when, in practice week, they would get my bike up to the paddock and the holding area at the front. So I would go off. Normally you do a couple of laps and then you're brought in on that session. And I remember coming in after the second lap, got off my bike, heading towards the van, and the guys are going, "Where are you going?" I said, "That's it, I'm done." They went, "No, you're not. You can get another lap in." So I was like, "You what?" So the start line marshal was like, "Well, you've got 30 seconds to get up here. If you can get up here, I'll let you get out." So, okay, fine. So off I went. So you can imagine all the other riders were getting flagged coming in. So I had a complete lap on my own. So, you know, a full race course, fully marshalled, all the medics to myself. So, I mean, how much would that be worth? What sort of money would people pay for something like that? So that was one instance where I was like, this is unreal.
Oh, yeah, that must have been a real pinch-yourself moment.
Yeah, just literally going around doing a practice lap with nothing else on the road. It was, it was pretty good.
So but once you'd finished racing, what did you do afterwards? Because that would have been, I don't know, I could just imagine that must have been a tough time of year when you've been out there, done it, and then you're like, oh.
Yeah, it's, as I say, that's the problem once you've done racing, you know, everything else fails into insignificance. But yeah, I wanted to stay in the sport, and as I say, I helped a few guys, and then the opportunity came to be a tech, or a scrutineer as we're known. And I enjoyed that, but I missed the riding side of it, and when that opportunity came to go on the race school as a rider coach, then I jumped at that. So you're still getting your bike fixed, if you like, you know.
And you mentioned that sort of starting a family was behind the decision not to do any more racing, specifically sort of MGP-wise.
Yeah.
Any members of family showing any signs that they want to follow you?
My son, Daniel, who is now 14, he's involved helping some guys up in the paddock. He does, you know, running about with helping with the paddock stands, time warmers, that sort of thing. He's not shown that much interest riding yet. Which is fine, you know.
What do you think you'll be like if he does?
I'll be okay with it. I think, you know, if he wants to do it, let him do it. Obviously, you know, I've got the experience to be able to help him and coach him and make sure he does it right. But yeah, you know, you just got to let him do it if he wants to.
That's the thing, isn't it? I think if that passion is there somewhere, there's not very much anybody could say to turn around and go, "Nah, actually, don't do it."
No.
Do you think you would have listened to anything like that?
No, probably not. I mean, my mum was a little, well, yeah, as you can imagine, when I raced, she literally went off the island. She couldn't cope with it. So, yeah, I can understand it. It's not easy. But
I guess it's all about living that dream, isn't it? I mean, the whole purpose of this podcast is talking to people who've done it. And I just, again, we'll probably ask if there's anybody listening who thinks, you know, there is part of them that would love to give it a go, but they're not quite sure where to start, because it does seem sometimes like a completely different world that once you're in it, the relationships and the friendships within it seem, yeah, really special.
Yeah, the biking community is great. You know, everyone knows on the island there's some great groups of guys about. If they want to go racing, literally do some track days, get a feel for it. You can come on our race school and just get a feel for that as well. You don't really know until you get on track. You know, it's surprising, really. Some really good road riders out there who maybe think, maybe give it a go. But yeah, just contact Andreas Racing, easy, and just ask. Just contact any of us, we'll point you in the right direction.
And you mentioned your dad obviously having all the cars and bikes and whatever when you were growing up in the garage and house. Are you a little bit similar, Dave? Have you got lots of bike parts everywhere?
Not so much now. I've just got one bike, and I use that on the roads going out on a Sunday, and I also use it on the track. So, I haven't got so many toys as my dad used to have, definitely.
How did it all work for you in terms of when you were sort of building up to doing the Manx and having to go away racing? Presumably you were working as well, because, I mean, it's a real juggling act.
It is. I mean, I'm a financial advisor by qualification. As I say, I work in the insurance business and still do. So it's literally just, it's your hobby, isn't it? You know, you take your holidays and spare time, and that was it, really. You know, none of us, or most of us, aren't professional bike riders, unfortunately. But I was lucky that I had some really good sponsors who helped me put that input in, as I say, with them, with the two guys I mentioned, you know, Andy and Mick Jackson. I mean, there's a... I mean, here's the story, yeah, another one for you. When the race day came and I was in the pit lane and one of your guys, I think it might have even been Chris Kinley with his mic, walking around interviewing people, and he seen Andy and Mick and he was interviewing them, and I'm stood there going, hang on a minute, I'm the rider, what's going on here? So, you know, that was like, I was stood there, what? So that was quite interesting, having those two guys with me, and it kept Chris amused anyway.
I guess it's hard to overstate, really, just how much support in terms of both finance, but also, you know, just being there and that practical support, how much that means to a rider.
Yeah, big time. I mean, the costs, I think, are, you know, astronomical, really, now with racing. And I think we're seeing it right across the board, you know, motorsport. It has a big impact. It costs so much money now to be competitive. And I think we're seeing it on the island now as well, with certainly the big bike classes are suffering a little bit. I think people are looking towards the smaller capacity bikes, and certainly even MotoGP now, you know, they're going down an engine size, and it seems to be happening right across now. It's a bit more accessible, the smaller bikes, a lot cheaper to run, and I think we're seeing certainly the classes at Derby now are getting bigger with the smaller bike stuff now. So yeah.
I'll tell you the other great thing coming up through Derby as well, seeing more female riders too.
Yes, that's good, and it's there's no reason why they can't. You know, I mean, obviously we've got Carolyn now on the race school with us, and she's a big help as well. Obviously, girls are going to think, oh, well, she's done it. Let's give it a go, and it is good to see, and some of them are doing really well.
And you mentioned professional rider and saying, obviously, that wasn't what you were. Would you have wanted to do that professionally?
Probably not. I didn't do it for that reason. As I say, I started racing quite late on in my career. I got quite successful quite quickly, and it was quite a short career, really. And it was something that I'd always wanted to do, and I sort of ticked the box. So I'd had my career already there. But it was just nice to take it to that level. I was probably semi-professional competing. You know, I did some decent events in the UK against professional riders as well. But it wasn't something that I was looking to take further. But it was just nice to compete against them and do quite well.
And what sort of coaching style do you have, Dave? Are you somebody who gives a lot of advice? Do you kind of just suggest people find their own path?
No, we definitely give advice. You know, it's about teaching the whole experience, really. So, you know, you get the guys and girls, as I say, we get a group allocated to us, and we just talk to them and see where they are, what they're looking for. Some riders want a bit more one-to-one. Others are quite happy to just follow the group. But we teach them initially the racing lines around the track, and then we kind of watch them, and then let them ask us and see what they're struggling with, if we can see something, help with their technique. And a lot is to do with the mental side as well, you know, in the head. Some of them have got a bit of fear. Try and coach them around that as well. So yeah, it's coaching is very much an individual thing, really. But yeah, I try and give help and advice where I can.
And we know that there is a lot mentally within this sport. And how did you cope with that yourself as a rider? And I suppose the question would be, how do you cope with it now?
I mean, bringing it back, when you start to race on the roads, or you say you're going to do the Manx Grand Prix or the TT, people initially think you're mad, you're crazy, you know, what's wrong with you? When in reality, you know, you've got to be focused, precise, pretty calm. at that sort of speed, you know? I mean, yeah, whether there's an element of madness in there, I don't know. But maybe there is. but, yeah, so trying to coach that to other people now after going through it, you know, it's not just winding the throttle on to go fast. There's so much more to it. It's about when not to wind the throttle on. It's about teaching them the proper technique and understanding what they're doing and what they're not doing. So there's a lot of things, really, and it's about being smooth and precise, really, getting a fast lap, not just winding the throttle on, you know, and being brave.
Did you suffer from pre-race nerves?
No, I was okay, to be honest with you. I was, I was quite calm, to be fair, which helped, I think. Once you get in that zone, I think, you just do it. But as I say, there's nothing like, you know, on that start line at the grandstand watching... and just watching the bikes in front of you disappear and you think, right, I'm next. It's just, there's nothing like it. As we've all said, you know, once you've done it, you kind of, everything else seems a bit of an anticlimax.
Do you remember that first time you got the tap on the shoulder?
I do. It was good. It was just, yeah, it's quite surreal, really. You're thinking, just tap. And we've all said it, you know, all the guys who've raced said it, that it, leading up to it, you can get a little bit anxious, maybe. But once you get that tap on the shoulder and off you go, I remember doing my control lap, the very first time you come through, the grandstand on your flying lap. I mean, that is just something else going down Bray Hill, and the speed you go, you know, it's good.
And as we're talking in the past couple of weeks, Dave, people have been finding out if they are going to be at MGP 2026. And obviously, those lucky people who've got the go-ahead for that. What would you say would be the best piece of advice that you could give them at this point?
Just listen to the coaches. I mean, I don't coach Manx Grand Prix now. I think Carolyn still does, and Milky and people like that. Just listen to what they're saying. Spend as much time as you can going around the course. You know, I know they can watch, you know, onboard laps and things like that now, and they just got to respect it. I mean, I remember myself riding a road bike on the island since I was a young kid, and you go around that course on open roads and you think you know it. And on a Sunday, you know, for example, you're going through Glen Helen and it's like left, right, left, right, left, you know. And when you're racing, you're on the other side of the road going straight. So it is a different ball game. So you just got to spend as much time as you can with the coaches and ask the riders and respect it, really. That's all you can do. And ultimately, they've got to enjoy it, haven't they? You know, at the end of the day.
Could you name every part of the course, do you reckon, every corner?
Probably not.
Could you at the time? Was that important to you? I'm just wondering what sort of learner you were, whether you're quite methodical.
I think. As I say, with going around the course since I've been a kid, you know it geographically. Some of the smaller bends, you probably think, what was that called? But you've definitely got an advantage living over here. You know what's next. You know, whether it's a left or a right, or it's the road's going to open out, or it's tight. I mean, I followed a couple of foreign guys out when I was in practice, and they were literally lifting their head up and down and up and down, and it was like, you know, they just don't know where they're going. And you're thinking, you know, I'm racing against these guys later on in the week. But yeah, I know where I'm going, and it's a big help knowing where you're going, even if the racing lines are different to your road lines.
We talked to a lot of people who are learning the course currently, Dave, who use the TT game as a little bit of a marker to learn everything. Is that a feature in your house? I mean, you mentioned your son. Has he got that game?
He tends to watch and do. He's into Formula One, but believe it or not. We watch on boards and stuff like that. He's often watching Michael Dunlop and things like that, and all the TT stuff as well. You know, so yeah, it's there. You know, I wouldn't say we watch it all the time, but it's certainly something we watch.
Would you be a whiz on the TT game on the PlayStation?
Probably not, no.
I might be able to beat you on that, maybe?
Probably.
Okay, we might have to give that a go. And I just, finally, Dave, if there was one rider from throughout the sort of TT and MGP history that you could race against, who would it be and why?
Oh, what a question. I think, personally, and I knew him as well, was Steve Hislop. Such a classy rider. I think watching him, you know, if I could ride, even following him, which I probably wouldn't get anywhere near, But yeah, just I think he was just so smooth and so good that yeah, he's one guy that I think I really admired. I mean, obviously, you know, I admire them all, and you know, you've got your Joey and Dave Jeffries and people like that, and of course Michael Dunlop and John. The list is endless. But yeah, Steve, I think, was somebody that I thought, from a technical point of view, he was so good.
Have you got your trophies up somewhere still in the house?
I've got a few knocking about, but yeah, they're not really on show all the time now.
The downstairs loo always seems to be a favourite place to put them, doesn't it? And just make sure everyone can see them.
Yeah, no, there's none in there. There's a few dotted about. But I've got stuff from car racing as well, you know, stock car racing. There's trophies all over the place somewhere. So, yeah, no, I don't have them all on display. They're in a box, most of them.
Oh, you need to dig them out, Dave. And as we're speaking then, as I say, sort of end of January, what's coming up next for you then? When's the first race school getting underway?
Yeah, when the season starts at Andreas in March. So, yeah, we'll run a classroom course at the TT Media Centre prior to the first race meeting in March. So,
yeah, I guess it's just great to see the next crop of potential success going through that school here on the Isle of Man.
Yeah, I think motorcycle racing on the island is quite healthy at the moment. You know, we see a good cross-section of people wanting to race. We see a lot of younger guys and some older guys as well who've maybe thought about it. Maybe they're in a better financial position than they were. And of course, you know, come and see us. Go and chat to the guys at Andreas. The club's doing really well. The guys at Andreas are always approachable. And yeah, just come and see us and have a chat.
Dave, it's been brilliant talking to you. Thank you so much for coming in.
No problem. Thanks, Beth.
Brilliant to talk to Dave there. And as he was saying, the Andreas Racing Association here on the Isle of Man is such a great point of contact for anybody thinking about getting involved in racing in any capacity at all. Go up and give it a try. The details of how to get in touch with them are on the podcast page. Thank you very much, as I say, to Dave. And if you'd like to be part of the Journey to a Dream podcast, then do drop me an email, bethsb@manxradio.com. And until next time, take care. Bye-bye.